Pennsylvania still has one of the highest unemployment rates in the country at nearly 14% and has since the beginning of the pandemic. For many people who've been laid off or had their hours cut to little or nothing, it's been really tough.
I mean, I could go back to doing Uber and Lyft, but that's not a safe thing to do. I have asthma. My oldest has asthma.
I've lost my insurance and I had to not get a medication because it was $200.
I have been going to the free food line.
We were stuck. I had no money coming in. And living off just his income, it doesn't cut it.
Things have gotten a little better in the last few weeks as retail and other businesses have been able to open back up. But people in industries that really rely on interacting in person, many of whom have spent decades building their careers, don't know when their jobs and gigs will ever come back. Meanwhile, unemployment benefits are in flux, leaving many who are jobless treading water at best. So what can they do while they wait for their jobs to return? And what kind of impact will that wait have on their careers? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. Laura Benchoff is a reporter for WHYY's Keystone Crossroads. Laura, you've been covering the unemployment situation through the pandemic. And for a recent story, you talked to a bunch of people who are still unemployed now, more than 5 months after the lockdown started. Can you just briefly tell me some of their stories and what they're going through right now?
Sure. There was a violinist with the Pennsylvania Ballet. Her name is Becky Ansell.
Pre-pandemic, I did two shows at the Walnut Street Theater. I played Young Frankenstein and I played Shrek. I also did some Nutcrackers.
And when the pandemic hit, they were in the middle of a concert series and everything just stopped.
I think the initial thinking was this isn't great, but maybe it will be 6 weeks. You know, maybe we'll be back by, you know, the end of April. You know, it will be like a 6 week kind of hold on our lives. And then, you know, we were all on a Zoom call with the ballet and they decide, you know, they had to cancel the May run.
Essentially, the lion's share of her work, the large majority of her work has dried up. I talked to another person, a guy named Chris Connolly. He was working in films and television. So his job is called a dolly grip.
We basically handle any sort of camera movement and camera support and any sort of non-electrical forms of lighting.
And he described a workplace where, you know, you're really cheek to jowl with other people and shoots have more or less dissolved. I think he said the only people he knows who are working right now kind of in his behind-the-scenes field are people who are being paid to tear down sets.
Sets that were standing in a soundstage for shows that aren't coming back, but not a whole lot going on yet.
And then I also spoke with a guy named Andrew Terranova, who lives in Philly. He works in hospitality, so he's a concierge, and he's also a part-time tour guide.
I love showing people around Philadelphia, and I'm a huge American history nerd, and I try to get people as excited as I am about some rather boring stuff that you learned about in high school. I try to make it exciting.
And obviously tourism has really plummeted due to the pandemic, so he was furloughed pretty early in the pandemic and is still just sort of waiting it out.
Yeah, I don't think I made it to March 16th. I was on the schedule for them, but then I disappeared. It just evaporated.
So at this point in the pandemic, just in Pennsylvania, we still have about 1.5 million people collecting some form of unemployment. Remind us how we got to that point. Like, where were things in the state in the beginning and how did we get here?
Right. So Pennsylvania shut down pretty early and pretty completely in the middle of March. And at that point, employment just plummeted. It was a really severe amount of job loss. And we saw for the first sort of few weeks of the pandemic really hitting the United States, Pennsylvania would be near the top every single week nationally of states where new people were filing for unemployment.
Unemployment in the Commonwealth was up to 15.1 last month, increasing by 11 points from last April. This is the highest rate of state unemployment on record.
Since then, you know, we've seen some rebounds, which has been the case nationally as well, where certain kinds of retail that were initially not allowed. Retail's been back for a few months now. People still had a relationship with their employer. Maybe they were called back. They've had to modify how they do their job, but maybe they're working. Right. But for the most part, that has not been the case for more than half of people who lost their jobs due to the pandemic.
So all three of these people you talked to haven't been working pretty much since early on in the pandemic. How have they been getting by?
They all applied for unemployment. And, you know, there have been some hiccups in those systems because so many people have applied. But for the most part, they've been able to receive the benefits that are offered both at the state level and then also receive the extra $600 a week that had been given out through the CARES Act through the end of July. Kind of enough to keep a lot of people's spending more status quo than with when they had a job.
And then what happened to that extra money from the federal government at the end of July?
It expired. It was time limited from the beginning. And I think now we're at a different place in the pandemic. Things don't feel immediate and urgent in the way that they did in March, but there's still a lot of people suffering. And so what the right response to that should be has been a big matter of debate. And there just hasn't been an agreement on what that relief should look like.
Why not, do you think? Like, what's been the holdup in kind of continuing that if there are still, as you said, more than half of people who lost their jobs still basically out of work?
I think it's political. It's ideological. You have different attitudes about spending between the two major political parties in the United States. You have different attitudes about what the right way to provide relief is, right? Should relief be targeted more towards businesses or should it be targeted more towards workers or both? And I think there were concerns that it was just too high. It was too generous. So there was sort of disagreement between the White House and House Democrats about how much that disbursement should be. I think there's an agreement that something should be done, but the dollar amount felt like it was just a hotly debated number.
And so is there any help coming from the federal government, like even in the short term?
There is, but like a lot of things right now, the timeline is pretty ambiguous. After the White House and House Democrats failed to reach an agreement on what a legislated relief package or stimulus package could look like, President Trump issued an executive order making a few tweaks temporarily and using emergency powers to do so.
Under the CARES Act, I proudly signed expanded unemployment benefits into law. Congressional Democrats have stonewalled our efforts to extend this relief.
So what he created was a pot of money that is, I believe, about $44 billion, which sounds like a lot, but could run out quickly, that would go out in $300 a week payments. And so states have had to sign up. I believe more than half of the states in the country have signed up, including Pennsylvania, to get some of this money and start giving it to people who are out of work. But it's less money. And because of some red tape, basically, it requires states to set up new computer systems to manage and to give it out. So that takes a little bit of time. Governor Tom Wolf and his administration have criticized this as sort of a Band-Aid or a stopgap, an insufficient kind of relief to meet the need of the moment. At the same time, Congress hasn't given them another option. The states themselves don't have the funds to do this type of program. So they have gone ahead and signed up for it while also being critical of the leadership in Washington for making them sign up for it.
When we come back,
if America were a business right now, yeah, I'd be writing to the manager.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. I'm talking with Laura Benchoff of WHYY's Keystone Crossroads about how people laid off from fields that require lots of in-person interaction are coping through what's looking like a very long road back to their careers. Laura, for people like Becky, Chris, and Andrew, what's our best guess as to when jobs in their careers will start to come back?
it's really hard to say. I feel like you need an economist and a public health official and a crystal ball to put that answer together. You know, some economists say the ultimate exit of this recession will come with a vaccine.
Yeah.
Or after a vaccine.
And do people like Becky, Chris, and Andrew, do they sort of fall into those categories, that category of industries that probably won't come back until we, until, like you said, we have some kind of a vaccine or a good treatment?
That seems entirely possible. You know, taking them one at a time. Becky works in the pit of an orchestra in a theater. You know, those are layers of human interaction, layers of singing and being close to other people. And we just know those are high risk activities right now. And there isn't really an alternative that involves still employing a full orchestra to deliver that entertainment to people.
It's not like, oh, I'm taking 3 months off. It's, you know, essentially it's like we're taking 18 months off.
Chris, you know, he was sort of hopeful that some of the shoots he was supposed to do earlier in the year would maybe be done in a more socially distanced basis in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the show I had been working on in Philadelphia, I've been hearing it's supposed to start up in October sometime.
But it's not clear that's going to happen, or if it is, it's one gig and then who knows what comes next, right? And then Andrew, I mean, from everyone I've talked to who works in hospitality, there's just a real, there's a break-even point, and a lot of hotels are not at the point where they are bringing in enough people to justify employing all of the concierges they did before.
I mean, I was lucky. I was in a position where I could pay my rent through winter, through December. So I'm very, very lucky. I'm actually more fortunate than a lot of other people.
So how do Becky, Chris, and Andrew feel about how this benefits fight has played out at the federal level with the $600 expiring and this lesser benefit for some period of time?
They all said in different words, basically, that they're frustrated.
I don't understand the perspective that $600 is too much. I don't see how that's too much when you consider how much we're all losing.
The increased payment for unemployment that recently expired, that definitely made it a lot easier to cover the bills and not really be blowing through my savings.
Andrew had a really funny way of putting it. Was basically, you know, he works in hospitality. He's used to pleasing the customer.
If America were a business right now, yeah, I'd be writing to the manager, you know, asking what's going on and why we're being treated so poorly. And the uncertainty of it all. I mean, it's uncertain times we live in with life and death. That's bad enough. And now the uncertainty of not being taken care of by our own country, you know, it's befuddling. And it makes me really sad for this country.
He's an unhappy customer of the federal government.
Pretty much, yeah. So Andrew is kind of joking about this, but many people told me they're making pretty big cuts to their lives because they don't have this extra money coming in. You know, they're going to food banks or they're getting ready to apply for SNAP or Medicaid and relying on friends and family in a different way because that's what they have now because this bigger safety net has gone away. And so he's an unhappy customer, but what that really means in this country is that you have to go somewhere else for help, and that's stressful in itself.
Mm. What could they possibly do for the next few months? Like, it seems like they're in just a very tough spot.
The alternatives that exist are not necessarily desirable ones, and they're not necessarily ones that pay anywhere close to what people were making before, so.
What are some of those alternatives?
Well, you know, for example, you could drive for Uber and Lyft. That's still happening. Is that going to earn you what you made before? Not necessarily. You know, early in the pandemic, there were some hiring sprees at warehouse fulfillment centers because so many people are ordering things online. You know, that requires people with certain kinds of stamina and ability and schedules that not everyone has. And I talked to folks who had tried to get work in pretty, like, I would say pretty, like, normal fallback jobs of, oh, you know, I'm in between things. Maybe I can pick up a waitressing gig, or maybe I can pick up, you know, a fast food job or something.
Right.
Those fallback jobs are now in higher demand too. So they weren't necessarily finding stopgaps. And that extra money from the federal government in many cases was the thing keeping them from really having to shed parts of their lives, having, you know, keeping them current on their bills.
Are people who are in these fields that really probably won't come back right away. Are they thinking about just doing something else entirely? Go through, you know, the three people that we talked about and how they're approaching that question.
It really depends, again, on how tough your financial situation is. Becky, for example, she knew she wanted to be a violinist as soon as she picked up the instrument, she said. So there's no going back. You know, she said the pandemic has made her appreciate her job even more because she's not able to do it.
It's such a part of my soul and who I am. And I don't feel like the same person, you know?
Chris, similarly, works in a very collaborative environment, working in films and television, went to school for it, has worked his way up the hierarchy. And he's just really holding out hope that it will come back.
I guess if things get really desperate, then I guess I would start having to maybe find some sort of temporary work situation, if that even exists.
Same with Andrew. Andrew was adamant.
Nope, I'm not going to leave it. Nope. I will never leave hospitality. It's what I do. It's my life. I've been doing it since I was 17 years old. It's so fulfilling and fun, and I'm good at it too, which makes me really happy. Because I'm not good at a lot of things, but this I can do. I'm going to weather the storm and just survive, I guess.
Andrew, I think, is like a lot of people who've invested in a certain path and they're not ready to abandon it. And there's just a big question mark. What is it going to look like when we do get to the other side of this recession? You know, we do know from the last one that people who are unemployed long-term did have a harder time re-entering the workforce. And now long-term is 6 months or more, and we're hitting that point in this pandemic. So there's a lot of people who will have been unemployed for long stretches of time and may have trouble rejoining the workforce even when things start to look normal again. And some of the economists and experts I spoke to indicated that a lot of that could also just come down to the federal response. They talked about a need for both relief, so helping people keep their heads above water now, and also stimulus, this idea that people are going to need some confidence boost when there is a vaccine or when there is, you know, a lot more mitigation in place. People feel like they can do the things that they were doing before safely. They might still need some economic stimulus from the government to be ready to invest again, to be ready to create jobs again. And we just don't really know what that looks like right now.
Laura, thanks very much.
Thank you, Shai. Thanks for having me.
Laura Benchoff is a reporter for WHYY's Keystone Crossroads. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, and Sabrina Boyd Circa, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. We had editing help on this episode from Kevin McCory. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Stay safe, and we'll see you tomorrow.